Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
46% of Americans expect to leave behind financial obligations when they pass away, so it's crucial to make sure your family is financially protected. Policy Genius helps you find the right life insurance coverage by comparing options from America's top insurers with help from licensed, award-winning agents. Secure your financial future with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get free life insurance quotes in just a few clicks. That's policygenius.com.
Number one, on the dam. Number two, all four corners of the dam, upper and lower. I'm seeing a damn theme here.
This is Bob the Garbage Man Bratana Nananuski. And one time, I dressed up as an Atlantic City police officer.
He goes, hey, do you want your fish clean? And me being four, I'm like, yeah, I would like a shiny, clean fish.
Oh, sweetheart, the great pumpkin has fins. Fins!
Good morning, degenerate anglers, and welcome to Bent, the fishing podcast that still dresses up like Roland Martin every Halloween, even though it just spends its entire night explaining that it isn't supposed to be Ric Flair during a golf outing. I'm Joe Cermelli, and guess who's riding shotgun for this entire cut-rate haunted hayride? Hayden Samick, that's who.
Yo, how are you, Joe?
I am great, man. Yeah, buddy. Hayden is rolling along for this whole loosely Halloween-themed show we're doing since Halloween is this Sunday, which begs the question, because we've done Halloween show. We did a Halloween show last year, so everybody knows I'm a fan of Halloween. But I don't know. Are you a fan of Halloween? Does this holiday excite you?
You know, I get a little excited, but it gets different as you get older. Like, you know what I mean? Like, at first, it's this real, like, wholesome excitement because you're a kid excited about running around with your friends and getting free candy. Then the pendulum swings to the other side around college when you get excited about, like, completely unwholesome things relating to Halloween. And, but the pendulum's swinging back, and I'm kind of just excited to, like, you know, hang out and hand out some candy and dress my dog up stupid and, yeah, so, yeah.
Oh, you're in the dress up the dog phase. The next phase, and then it rekindles, is someday you'll have kids, and then Halloween gets super fun again because you see them just run around and like fall over and cry and stuff. But yeah, just stick with the dog for now. Don't rush that other part I just said. So then, what is the most ridiculous thing you've ever dressed up as? Whether that's child phase or college phase, what is it?
When I was a kid, I dressed up as a hockey goalie, like complete with like rollerblades and everything, and eventually it got too hot and I realized it was super inefficient because while all my friends were just running from door, like crossing the side lawn and going to the next door, I would have to go all the way out whatever like walkway, all the way down their driveway to the street, cross the street, up the next. It was bad. I decided I was going to be an X Games rollerblader instead. So the only part of the costume I kept on was like the rollerblades. And I remember crossing a side lawn to catch up with my buddies and yelling, X Games rules! And as I did that, I slipped out and broke my arm.
So basically, you were just kid in rollerblades was the costume by the end.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's funny, though, man, because I used to play a lot of roller hockey, and that was always the deal. Like, I played goal. I loved goal. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm going to do goal on skates. And then, like, one fake period on the street, and I'm like, I'm going to take off the skates. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, you know, all the neighborhood kids got together and donated candy because I had to go to the hospital.
Well, oh, no, that's so nice.
It sounds nice, but actually, the little shitheads, they when their mom asked them to donate the candy, they gave me like all like the Tootsie Rolls and the Raisin Boxes and just shit they didn't want.
You got the Raisinets and the Necco wafers, man. Yeah, well, thanks, that's Tyler. How you do when you're a kid. I wish I had a story that good. I don't. I'm actually pretty lame. Would you believe I have not put on a Halloween costume since high school? And it's mostly because I have no friends, and the few I do have don't have Halloween parties. If they do, they don't invite me. But the last time I got dressed up was my senior year of high school. I know, man. It's brutal. It's brutal. Enjoy your youth. This was at a Catholic high school, mind you, and only the seniors were allowed to come in costume. So I just basically wore jeans and a T-shirt, similar to your X Games outfit.
Uh-huh.
But I did my face up with one of those zombie kits, and I got to say, I was pretty good at those. You know, the ones with the blood and the scar putty and all that shit. They're like, you know, $50 at the Halloween store. I could do them really, really realistically, right? I was really good at them. And the people in school were freaked out. But then what happened is I fell asleep with my head down on a desk during class, which was common for me.
That's shocking.
Yeah, I know. It's just, you know, this is an elective. I will sleep through it.
Uh-huh.
But when I got up, my face was plastered to the desk, and all that shit just like peeled off my face and was stuck all over my open textbooks and completely ruined them. Oh. So that's the last time I did Halloween. So
textbook covers can't protect you from everything, man.
Yeah, I know. I know. Brown paper bag.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's like kind of unsurprising to me that you're good with like zombie makeup. I feel like you're kind of a creative dude and like, you know, kind of crafty and shit, you know?
A little bit. My wife is more artistic than I am, but I always love that stuff. And that was the last time in high school when I did the zombie makeup deal. But every Halloween, I'm like dying to put it on my kids, and they won't let me. Like, my daughter will be like, "Oh, I want to be a cheerleader," and I'm like, "Perfect. Can you be a zombie cheerleader?" She's like, "No, no, Daddy, no." She refuses. Anyway, to get us in the Halloween spirit, here's what I did. Right, since we're talking costumes, I did a thing.
Yeah.
I called up a bunch of past guests to find out the most embarrassing or crazy or ridiculous costume they ever wore. Ah. And we'll be peppering them throughout the show. And we'll start with my bud Brian Wise, streamer tire extraordinaire of Fly Fishing the Ozarks fame.
Hey, this is Brian Wise with Fly Fishing the Ozarks. And the weirdest thing I dressed up for Halloween was a girl when I was like 12. Went to an old folks' home, and all the people there thought I was the mom.
This is going to sound weird, right? But I can picture Brian in drag. Like, I kind of think it works. Like, he's got like nice high cheekbones. You know what I'm saying? Like, he could really pull it off.
That does sound weird. I have no idea what Brian looks like other than other than nice cheekbones, I guess. But I will take your word for it.
You don't watch Brian Wise's streamer videos, dude? They're like world famous, set to dubstep. Where you been, man?
Sorry, Brian.
All right, we're going to have to get you up to speed on that. All right, so what else are we diving into today? The land of zombie salmon. That's fitting for Halloween. That plays well. Although I think the land of zombie Great Lake salmon will soon be turning into the land of Great Lake steelhead. And if you play that game, I highly recommend the Fate Steel line of rods from our sponsors, 13 Fishing. I've used mine for shad because a long, light rod comes in handy there. But I'm really hoping to get them on some steel this winter. And by the way, now that you're in the bent fold here, Hayden, I think you're entitled to some 13 wares. What takes your fancy? Because I'm sure I can make it happen.
Ooh, that's exciting. I have a confession to make. And this is going to be truly jarring to more than a couple of our listeners, I guess. But would you believe that I do not currently own a single piece of conventional gear?
Ah, that's a big strike against you. But I know you conventionally fished. So are you just saying you didn't bother to bring any of the Zebcos out to Montana? Like, you just have none on hand?
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened. Basically, I came out here last year after, like, you know, in, like, November. I came out here in a Subaru Impreza, so I had just everything I owned in this little, like, hatchback. Yeah, there isn't, like, a ton of bass fishing out here.
Yeah.
And walleye are, like, kind of beyond me, although I've been...
I get it. I get it. I'm not,
I just haven't had a chance to... I haven't had any money to get to get a bunch of fishing gear yet. I had to buy, like, lame things like pots and pans and a bed frame.
You don't have an IKEA out there either, do you?
No, no. In fact, I tried ordering stuff from IKEA. It was like, yeah, we'll get it through in 4 months. I was like, well, that's not super helpful. But
You
know what I really could use, though?
What's that?
I would love some hard water gear. I'm planning to hit the ice super hard this winter because, you know, I mean, everything tastes better when you pull it through the ice, man. You know,
agreed.
Everything's
a fish
firmer.
Out of cold water always tastes better, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So if I were to get something from 13 Fishing, man, I would love some hard water gear.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Ice fishing gear will get you some Black Bettys. Excellent choice there. I will work on that. But until then, let's go shopping elsewhere, okay? Because we've got a sale bin today that you listeners have been begging for. And it's a little mysterious, it's a little spooky, and you just don't know if it's safe to consume or if it's riddled with pushpins and razor blades.
Well, why did you put the ad in the paper if you don't know what I'm getting at?
Well, you didn't have to be so hurtful with me, so angry.
Today, we've got what I've at least decided is the perfect Halloween sale bin item because it's very trick-or-treat, right? Could be good, could be shit. Don't know. But thanks to several listeners that sent this one along, there are too many of you to name, but at least 10 of you fired this one off, and I thank you for it. But very quickly, before I dive into this particular item, since this is Hayden's first sale bin, I always like to know like where everyone stands on the online buying of other people's wares. Are you an online classified shopper? Do you look for things on Facebook and Craigslist and such?
Shit, yeah. Your boy's been known to be a little bit thrifty like that. You know,
what do you buy? What do you like? What do you use it for?
Dude, all sorts of gear, man. I've bought a bunch of guitars from a website called Reverb, but like I also buy a lot of my waterfowl decoys from like pissed off ex-wives and girlfriends. You know, full body decoys are expensive, man. And the best sale I've ever found is when, you know, you got like a spurn lover swinging the auction gavel. You know what I mean?
I do know, dude. I do know. And like those posts are so rare and you got to be quick on it. But you see them every once in a while, like on Craigslist. It's like every piece of fish tackle and fish poles in my condo needs to be gone tomorrow. Call Holly. And you know, it's like, man, I need to get there tomorrow before he gets back from work. You know,
yeah, I'm about to have a way better day than this guy's about to have.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh man. So anyway, so here's what we have. I'm glad you're an online classified person. That makes this more fun. So here's what we have. Okay. The title of this post. And now, mind you, I'm betting that even more people have seen this post than sent it. It's out there in all kinds of different Facebook forums. The title is Secret Jigs I Use at Missouri Trout Parks. And the photo is just a shot of a railing surrounding a low head dam. And you see a lone angler waiting just above the dam. And I'm just surmising here, really. But I'm gonna say it was probably taken at a Missouri Trout Park. Would be my guess.
I would say that's probably a fair assumption. Trout parks, I feel, are a very interesting cultural phenomenon. And
totally.
And I think that what's interesting about them is there are some folks that are like very dedicated to visiting.
Yeah, that's just what they do. Yep. Yeah.
And honestly, like, you know, I'm sure it breeds a certain level of skill just because of, like, the ability to rapidly A-B test a bunch of different stuff over fish that, you know are seeing it.
Well, dude, and there's some truth to that. It's like on one hand, you step back and you're like, trout park, that's lame. I would never do that. But if you're into that, these places tend to have their ringers like, that's old Bill over there. He gets them every time. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. it's like a jockeying for position at some of these trout parks. I would bet.
Yeah. My experience at trout parks overall is very limited, but I will tell you a quick story about one. And this is a story I told at my grandfather's funeral. I'm coming in with him today, man. I'm ready. So when I was a kid, one of my first trout fishing excursions was at one of these trout parks. And this one in particular was like a kind of catch and keep pay to play, right?
Right, right.
I'm about 4 years old or something, and I managed to catch a fish. And, you know, my dad puts them in the 10-gallon bucket and kind of – I'm now no longer interested in fishing. I'm interested in watching this one particular fish kind of swim around. So a couple hours go by, and we're leaving the trout park. And we passed the shed with the teenager and the fillet knife. And the guy kind of looks at me as I'm leaving and he goes, "Hey, do you want your fish cleaned?" And me being four, I'm like, "Yeah, I would like a shiny, clean fish."
Oh, no. Oh, poor little you.
A dude reaches into the bucket, slaps on the cutting board, and I'm thinking, that's a weird way to clean a fish. I feel like it's probably not super good for it. And he just eviscerates this fish in front of me, and I cried all the way home.
And you've never been back to a trout park since. Oh, man, that's so sad, but so funny.
Philip!
Anyway, story time over. So these secret jigs, right? These secret jigs, they'll cost you $10, and for $10, you get 10. So a buck a jig, which isn't terrible, right? That's a lot cheaper than dry flies.
A lot cheaper than dry flies. $3.50 most places nowadays, yeah, which is horrifying.
For like one blue wing olive costs you $3.50, right?
Not even tied good.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyhow, man, I would say that these $1 jigs are not only a good price, but a steal for what they are. And what they are
tell us.
Lightning in a bottle, man. I'm going to read the listeners description of the jigs in question. So 10 for 10, my secret jig that I catch 30 to 50 trout a day. No picture to keep it secret. I guarantee you will catch your limit daily. I have used this jig for 48 years. We'll also throw in a detailed diagram of how to use it. Phone number hidden.
48 years is kind of odd. Why not just say 50 or 45? Like, that's very specific.
Hey, you want to know that he's an honest dude, and these jigs will really catch 30. So he can't be exaggerating.
Right. But so I got to say, right? In a way, it's kind of genius marketing. It's like the grown-up version of the surprise eggs all the little kids are into, right? And much cheaper, I might add, because I know from experience. It's like, you know, you give me $10 and trust me, this is going to be good. Like, you're going to like this.
There are a lot of secret recipes that people go to great lengths to keep that way.
Yeah, dude, 100%. But this is like a wink and a nod you've put out on the entire internet.
I'm surprised they didn't put it on the dark web. Right.
So he's trying to keep it secret, and then he assumes the buyer will keep it secret. But you know, at some point, some asshole is going to spill the beans, and that asshole is me because I have purchased these.
Oh, you didn't.
I did. I'm holding the package here, and I have not opened it, and it's been killing me for over a week. I have been saving this for this moment on this sale bin right here. This is going to be the first ever unboxing on this podcast. I got to say, I just did this through Facebook, and not to be rude, but like, you're not giving your credit card to like a business. You're dealing with some rando dude that fishes Missouri trout parks. So I'm still convinced somehow this will result in like my bank account being drained or my identity stolen.
I gotta introduce you to PayPal, man.
Well, yeah, I use PayPal, okay? Smart guy, but still, I'm like from Jersey. I don't trust nobody, you know what I mean?
Well, apparently you do.
Yeah, well, yeah, but it's all worth it to amuse the Ben audience. I'm doing this because I want you all to catch more fish, goddammit. Like, I want you to have all the advantages. On the other hand, I want you to know if you're getting scammed. I believe it's worth $10 of my hard-earned money to let you know this. I'm not even going to expense this, dude. I'm not even going to make Meat Eater pay for what very well could be a mistake. This is a lot of pressure on you, too, because this could be a cloud of anthrax. Like, you're watching me on the computer right now. Like, and, I can open this and inhale something. And now that you said that,
I'm very happy I'm watching you on the computer.
You're safe out there in Montana.
Yeah.
It could be a mail bomb, although it's very light. It would be the most sophisticated mail bomb ever. But I'm actually, listen, this is my scissors. I have sat on this for a week, and this is it. Phil, you need to put a drum roll over this.
I'm so happy.
I am cutting the envelope right now, and together we are going to see about these secret jigs. Oh, look, dude, they're all wrapped up in weird paper.
These are going to be good.
Oh, my God. Is it a scam? Oh, no, that's the diagram. Oh, my God, dude. You've got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. I'm going to see. I'm going to hold this so you can see it.
It's in
it
a
is literally a tiny bag. Can you even see that?
Oh, my God.
Of like,
those are Perdigons.
It's Perdigons in all white. It is literally just a jig style hook, gold with an itty bitty head that looks like a nymph head, painted white, and then he has just wrapped white thread behind it and tapered it. That is it. That is all that it is.
I was expecting like bucktail or just
I was expecting it anything. To be like some 48 years, dude. This should have been some precursor to the trout magnet or something. These I mean, all it looks like is a euro nymph with an upturned eye. It's just a white thread.
What is the diagram?
Let's look at the details. Let's look
Does
at the description.
Put a worm on it.
The detail diagram.
It's going to tell you to tip it with something.
And I read the dam guy's advice for catching trout at Bennett Springs State Park. If you fish Bennett Springs State Park, this is your lucky day. Man, how to set up fly rod or spinning rod for this jig. Number one, always use 2-pound test line or less. What's less than 2-pound test line? 8X tippet? I don't even know.
I don't know. Does he have some secret line that he also sells with these secret jigs?
No, man. Always try and fish about 6 inches from bottom. Always make sure there isn't any moss on the jig. Parentheses, very important. Use an adjustable cork. When using a spinning rod, make sure you keep the line tight. Tie jig on leader between 6 and 8 inches above that and put number 6 split shot. Adjust cork accordingly. Best place to fish this jig at Bennett Spring, number 1, on the dam. Number 2, all 4 corners of the dam, upper and lower. I'm seeing a dam theme here.
Not many people think to fish the dam.
Oh my God, dude, this is number 3, all the handicapped spots.
Number selling jigs, he's selling waypoints.
Number 4, feeder stream outlet. Number 5, feeder stream from hatchery outlet to stream.
This is ridiculous.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to look, I just got to say, I have no doubt these will catch fish. Like these are like stock trout at a trout park. Why not? It just looks like a little white maggot or something.
This is, well, I mean, yeah, sure. Sure. I mean, like, you know, like it's like, you know, a waltz worm looks like nothing too. I think it's funny that like it's so fish park, not fish parks in general, but fish park singular specific. And I do like that if you took anybody to survey this body of water and you were like, where do you think you catch some fish? They would point to all of this dude's secret spots immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like I'm not mad at dude. They're definitely heavier. I think these are lead. Like these aren't like a tungsten head or a traditional nymph
head.
I'm sure they're lead. I actually think these are itty bitty lead jig heads. But it's just so funny to me. I mean, there's not even a piece of flash in them. Not, it is literally just white thread. That's all it is.
What do you think the likelihood is that we have a listener that is in like reasonable proximity of this fish park?
If you are, hit me up. It also bothers me because now that I think about it, this man has my address. So he could now send me anthrax or a letter bomb for divulging the greatest secret in all of fishing on this podcast.
I don't get the feeling that this dude is super tech savvy, man. I think you're going to be all right.
Anyway, there you go. You know, some of you who sent that, I hinted, I was like, look, I can't do this without knowing. You can't lay this on people without being able to say this is what it is. So that is it. That is the secret to stock trout everywhere. A tiny lead jig head painted white with some white thread wrapped behind it. That was really fun, man. That was fun. That might be my all-time favorite sail bin right there. Naturally, I'm gonna put the pictures of these things on Instagram so you can all see it on Instagram and copy and tie these. If you want any more secrets revealed, you find something on your favorite classified online forum, do please keep sending those links to me at bent@themeateater.com. If you would love us to trash the things you find here on the sail bin.
Okay, that may have been my favorite thing that's ever happened on Bent. And honestly,
it's one of mine too.
And honestly, I'd feel bad that we burned dude spots if they weren't so obvious. Like, fish the dam, fish the outflow of the creek. Like, I'm surprised that he wasn't like fishing the big wet thing at the end of the dock, you know?
I've been thinking about it, and you know, I have a theory. I'll tell you my theory. I don't think that the dude fishes at Bennett Springs anymore. Because if he did, why would you do this? Why would you be so willing to give up all the goods on a very particular location if you are then just creating competition for yourself?
Have you considered maybe that you're the only dude who's bought his mystery jigs?
I know people are interested. I may be the only dummy that actually sent the man $10. Well, you are absolutely right.
Maybe it's like a one-off, and maybe he's like, if I can get like one dude on some fish and he really starts talking about how good these jigs are, I'll sell a bunch.
Maybe he's looking like whoever, but he's looking for someone to mentor, someone to bring up to his status. I don't know. Maybe we'll hear from him. I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, what matters in the end is, you know, that worked out great. I did not explode. You all learned how to crush trout at Missouri Trout Parks, Bennett Springs in particular. And speaking of things working out great, let's learn about a costume that worked out great for my buddy, Marty Yee of Cross Current Guide Service on the Upper Delaware River.
Hey, it's Marty from Cross Current Guide Service. The weirdest costume I ever wore was probably a full-body shark costume. But that's not the funny part. The funny part is it was actually the cleanest article of clothing I had. So I actually ended up wearing the shark costume for about 4 or 5 days after Halloween. Worked out great.
Party Marty. If this is the same Marty I'm thinking of, he was good friends with a late friend of mine, Jackie, that I knew from Salmon River Outfitters. And then also her ex-boyfriend, I guess, guides on the UD a little bit. My pal, all right. Chris.
It's the same Marty. I mean, Marty is Asian. He's the only Asian fishing guide I know on the Upper Delaware River. Does that ring a bell?
Yep, that rings a bell.
There it is. That's our Marty.
Yeah, the dude gets a mean croc tan. I follow him on Instagram.
He does. I just saw him a few months ago. I was like, damn, you're burned.
Yeah.
Anyway, for Marty, shark is a great choice, and I'm going to throw a shot of Party Marty in that shark costume passed out in front of a golf cart in my Instagram story today, because he made the mistake of sending that to me. That costume choice.
That is probably Party Marty.
that's Party Marty. That costume choice may have led to a lack of confidence once I post that, but I know someone who exudes confidence in everything he does, including choosing a costume. So let's hit another one. Let's find out how our friend Oliver Nye gets down on All Hallows.
Hey, this is Oliver Nye from Big Bass Streams, and my go-to Halloween costume is Tiger Woods, year in and year out, because it works better than a Defiant 210 swim bait.
Now that, to me, if you know what Oliver looks like, that is so perfect. Oliver is the perfect Tiger Woods, and I seem to get the impression anytime he has to dress up, that's just the go-to, and I say, hell, dude, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know too much about golf. I shot some geese on a golf course one time when I was a kid and got the cops called. But that's about like the limit of my golf course experience. I do know about Tiger Woods, though. And him and
I would hope so.
And him and I have something in common, a champion's mindset. And Joe, you better watch out, because I'm bringing that champion mindset into this week's installment of Fish News.
Fish News!
That escalated quickly.
Big news right out of the gate here that I'm very excited to share, mostly so people stop asking me. That's just real talk right there. Mark your calendars, because episode one of B-Side Fishing Season 2 drops next Friday, that's November 5th, on the Meat Eater YouTube channel, which means for a month straight, starting next Friday, you'll get a fresh bent and a fresh B-side on the same day. And so how on earth will you get any work done on Fridays is what I want to know.
It says here I'm supposed to tee you up to talk about some details about B-side.
Nice. Way to put the effort in on that one, Hayden. Yeah, that's what I wanted you to do, but I'll just go ahead and say I don't want to give away all the juice before the show starts rolling out, but a couple points of interest. You guys may recall season one was filmed entirely in my home state of New Jersey, which was just as much because of COVID as Jersey being a haven for unexpected fisheries. It kind of worked out, but when we were shooting that, we weren't getting on planes and stuff because of the COVIDs. But luckily, we're back to traveling, so this season we only got one local NJ show. And I have to add, co-starring Miles Nolte, sad face emoji, the legend lives on.
I love you, Miles.
Yeah, I love you, Miles, exactly. And then we're hitting up Virginia a couple times and Minnesota. And I got to say, if you appreciated the exploration of some of the lesser-known fish, like the tog and the pickerel from the first season, you're going to dig round two. We chase some unexpected species. And I really kind of challenged my own culinary mettle. And while this season, I got to say, was a lot more work than the last one, I had a lot of fun. And got to hang out and fish with some really cool people. So I'm pumped on it.
Yeah, man. I really like this series. It reminds me a lot of your Hookshot series, but like more polished. You know what I mean?
Well, people are always like, how would you describe B-Side? I'm like, it's Hookshots, man, only it looks better and is slightly more grown up. Otherwise, it's kind of the same thing.
Show's more grown up. Maybe not the host, but...
No.
I actually just binged the first season of B-Side about a month ago. And I was horrified to find out that I had been missing out on some quality Joe Cermelli content for so long. My buddy Maggie pretty much did... Did she do all the posts on this?
Yes. Maggie is awesome. Okay. Yes. She did all the posts, all the graphics. And that's one of those things you talk about the difference between the old show and the new show. It's like, wow, I have people to make me cool graphics. I never thought that would happen. I love it. I love everything that Maggie Smith does. It's killer. And it dawns on me that when the first season of B-Side launched, you didn't even work here yet, did you? You weren't even part of the Meat Eater crew. Right?
Well, no, that's how I missed it.
Right. Maybe down the road, Hayden, you'll be in one. Anyway, we'll move on to news here. As a reminder, this is a competition. Hayden and I do not know which news story the other guy grabbed, creating an element of mystery and the unexpected. We also enjoy a good plot twist, which which reminds me of our dear friend River Horse and his most zany Halloween costume. That goes a little something like this.
Hey now, this is River Horse from the deep south in Texas. My favorite Halloween costume I ever dressed up as was... Wait a minute. Oh my gosh, nice try. You all feel free to run around in sparkle glow Star Wars Jedi outfits and chase each other with fluorescent lightsabers. My saber is a Sage 8-weight fly rod. Because I'll be out in the canoe all night, sticking redfish under the full moon, baby. Oh, sweetheart, the great pumpkin has fins.
Yeah, that dude is at once very comforting and sort of unsettling a little bit.
Unsettling? Why? What's unsettling about River Horse?
I think part of it is like the creepy music that Phil kind of puts in there.
That's Phil, though. That's not River Horse, man. He'd have like some Skinner or some Joe Walsh jams in there if it were up to him.
That dude sounds like codeine or something. You know what I mean?
I love River Horse. I think he should be part of that Calm app. Make a lot of money. I'd rather listen to him at night than like Morgan Freeman or whoever is on there. He does raise a good point though. He threw us a little curveball there, but we already said that Halloween gets a lot more fun again when you have little kids. At the same time, if you don't and don't care about giving out candy, man, Halloween night is a great night to like go surf fishing because the beach is practically empty because everybody's involved.
Yeah, man. You know, whitetail hunting is also a little bit like that. Like there's like kind of like that magic that happens right around Halloween. Steelhead fishing too, you know, as long as we're on sort of legendary alternate Halloween activities, I guess.
Yeah, Halloween and Thanksgiving are both great outdoors days, and I hardly get to do anything outdoorsy on either of them anymore. But anyway.
Yeah. Anyhow, fish news. This is, as Joe said, a competition. And this week, we're offering up, Phil, our very best as normal, or Joe's very best.
Somewhat best.
Sort of mediocre. We're going to see if I can break the slide this week. Joe, I believe you're up first, man.
Yes, I am up first this week. And yeah, let's see if you break the slide is right. Here's a fun one from where?
The stars at night are big and bright.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
This comes from ksatnews.com, and it's the story of a potential record that's very unexpected, though satisfying to me because there's not an ounce of pretentiousness in it. Matter of fact, it was kind of like a goofy, jokey thing that happened, but I love the outcome. So here's what went down. On October 11th, Ben Christensen was floating down the Pedernales River in his little inflatable flycraft. Now, when I say this river is deep in the heart of Texas, I mean it is deep in the heart of Texas. It's pretty much smack dab in the center, and it's one of the many rivers that flows through Texas Hill Country, which I've always wanted to fish. I don't know if you're hip to the Texas Hill Country scene, but it's very cool.
It seems super cool. Maybe we'll have to go check it out sometime.
Yeah, maybe that'll be our B-side, you and me. Ooh, in Texas Hill Country.
That seems kind of like an A-side.
Yeah, well, I don't know. We'll find some dumb shit to do and turn it right around. We'll go there to chase whatever is not the thing you chase there. Yeah. It's kind of what I'm about sometimes. Anyway, yeah, so the Pedernales is one of those. It's like aqua blue. The water is just aqua. It's like filled with limestone ledges. It's just pretty and super juicy. And Texas Hill Country has quite the fly fishing culture there, right? And Ben is a big-time fly guy. In fact, the article says he's currently working on a book titled Fly Fishing San Antonio and the Texas Hill Country, which I would like to check out at some point.
Yeah, me too. But before we even get into this story more, because I know what this story is now that you've said the name and provided the context.
Okay.
I just want to point out another Ben, our listener, Ben Roussel. IG handle Mountains to Marsh sent this story to me because you apparently never read the news that he sends you.
I'm going to dispute that because Ben very well may have sent this, but like, I don't get all my news stories from listeners. Like sometimes if one of you guys hits something that I haven't seen yet, then I'm like, ooh, and I credit you for that. But strong chance I already knew about this and Ben sent it. And then, like, if you just send me a news story with nothing else, yes, okay, I don't always respond to them. But I respond to 99.9% of my DMs. People will back me up.
And yeah, that is very true. And I think in order to foster that listener connection, I think everybody listening to the Bent podcast should direct message Joe. And he will get back to each and every one of you with a very long and thoughtful response. Ask him anything. Ask him anything. Doesn't have to be about fishing.
I welcome that. But if you're going to DM me, like, why don't you send me an awkward photo or a bar nomination or a voice memo? If all of those people that just listen to Hayden say that responded with a voice memo, a lot more you'd get on this show more for Nibbles and
please,
Sips. I'm just saying.
Please do it. Please.
Anyway,
do it.
So speaking of Instagram. Ben, I looked him up on Instagram, and as predicted, right, his feed is loaded up with photos you'd expect from that region. Smaller bass, some carp, a few exotics that live there, and so on. And I think it's fair that, generally speaking, Texas Hill Country is sort of synonymous with what I'd call light tackle fly fishing, right? It's very clear water. You have to be stealthy. And I've talked to some guys down there who've said to me, like, yeah, man, you can't come here with a 7-weight and rip a big streamer around and expect catch anything. Like, you'll usually just scare shit because the water is so clear, right?
Yeah.
So that explains why on October 11th, Ben was wielding a 4-weight fly rod, which, in case you don't understand how fly rod weights work, trust me, that's light, right? I mean, that's lighter than your average trout rod. That's small, you know, stream trout stuff.
That's about what I use for small stream, yeah.
Yeah, like you know, not quite stuff you can jump over, but, you know, not big rivers, small weight
dry
stuff. Anyway, dry fly. It's a dry fly rod, exactly.
Yeah.
And you hope that the fish aren't bigger than like 16 inches. Yet when Ben spied a giant ass blue cat swimming around in that clear water, did that 4-weight stop him from casting a damselfly at it? Hell no, it didn't. Hell no. Did the cat eat the damsel? Hell yes. Hell yes,
hell yeah,
it did. And off to the races Ben went for, according to him, 40 minutes, right? Now, it's amazing that he landed this fish because it weighed 31.55 pounds. And if you factor in a light 4-weight rod, right, and then he was only using 12-pound tippet, whereas, you know, like serious blue cat guys chasing these fish elsewhere, especially fish of this caliber, I mean, they're using 50 to 80-pound leader, right?
Yeah.
And then you've got a damsel fly. I wouldn't exactly call it like a beefy saltwater deceiver. It's a fairly dainty trout pattern. It's, you know,
no, that's like a 12.
Right, exactly. It's a small fly. So for that little fly to hang on, or at least like not bend out during a 40-minute tussle with a fish that has a pretty hard mouth and fights like hell, is impressive. But it obviously tells me, you know, Ben is pretty adept at fighting fish. Like, dude, yeah, knows what he's doing. Because there's no margin of error there, especially when you consider in a shallow, rocky river. That cat can only go out, right? It's kind of, yeah, like how tuna are more fun in less than 100 feet of water because they can only sound so far. They have to go out, and they go screaming off.
Yeah.
Big cats do the same thing. If they have depth, they just try and stay deep, right? So you're bringing them up almost vertical.
And I mean, that makes pressure super, super difficult to apply there, man.
Like, yes,
you know, you can't just rip that rod sideways and reef on them. You got to kind of
nope. And I'm sure there were boulders and ledges and all kinds of obstacles in Ben's way. So I also love this, right? The fly was tied by Ben's son just the night before. It was an olive variant damsel. His son named Chips and Salsa, because,
ooh,
as he puts it, every fish wants to eat it. He's got a fly named Chips and Salsa. I love that.
That is a great.
It's a great name. Very catchy. That needs to be in fly bins everywhere. It will
real
sell.
Good.
So Ben is a strict catch and release angler, but he ended up keeping this cat because he was worried the long fight exhausted it and it would die anyway. But having that official weight could potentially land him in the record books, because according to the IGFA, the current blue cat record on 12-pound tippet only weighs 26.4 pounds. So that's a fairly significant difference there.
A big difference.
Yeah, and furthermore, Texas Parks and Wildlife says the catch is also pending the water body record for the Pedernales. Right?
And that's got to be all tackle.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I don't know if that's I know what you're saying. I don't know that much about how water body records work, but I don't believe in most cases that they're broken down by, you know, tippet class or anything. I think that just means he caught the biggest blue cat known to have ever come out of the Pedernales, which is pretty damn cool. And here's why I love this whole thing, right? Because many of us have been in Ben's position where some big ass fish pops up unexpectedly and you're totally not prepared for it. And you're like, do I cast at that? Oh, what the hell? Yes, I do. And if the fish eats, right, it either leads to glory or instant failure. But for that like split second of decision-making, you just don't even consider your line strength or your gear ratio and hook size, and you just go for it. And the last time this happened to me was a couple years ago. I was smallmouth fishing on a smaller stream around here. I was wading using pretty light outfit and 6-pound test. And mm-hmm. I'm flicking this small brown tube around. And every time I fished this river, I would see carp almost every time. And just for shits, every time I'd see them, I'd drop whatever I was throwing, a grub or a tube or whatever, in front of them. And never, not once ever did one eat it. And these are like smaller, like 5 to 8 pound fish. Never ate that, right? Well, this time, like, here comes old 20-pound rubber lips, and I just sent it, and the fish sucked it up like it was his last meal, and I just got dumped. And I tried chasing this fish down, and in the process, because I was trying to move along the bank really quickly, my line got wrapped in a branch, but closer to the rod tip, like closer to me, and that's where it snapped. So I lost the fish and pretty much all my line, and then I just had to go home, and it sucked.
utter defeat.
That's the chance you take, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've had a similar experience just like crappie fishing with a little two weight. Mm-hmm. And there were a bunch of these big carp in this pond where I was fishing. And, you know, I dropped that little like bead jig that I was fishing and pretty much immediately got all spooled out. And then
I was gonna say, there's only 10 feet of line on a two weight reel anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a pocket watch size reel.
Yeah.
And the, but before the line could run out, the carp broke the rod in half when it got caught around my reel.
Oh man, that's a bummer. I actually have a really good future nibbles and sips about a carp breaking a rod. Anyway, one final thought on this. In my opinion, catfish are kind of overlooked as a fly target, right? I know it's not like a front runner in the fly world, but some of the most fun I've ever had with a fly rod was throwing a mulberry pattern at blitzing channel cats on the Hudson River.
Huh.
And I've also stumbled into them rising for white flies too. And I have some buddies that claim they can get me a flathead on a streamer. I just haven't gotten there yet because that's one of those bites where they call you and they're like, bro, you need to get down to the Schuylkill in Philly now. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Right,
it's like you've got the window is there, they're doing the things and the water is right, and you could make it happen if you get here now, and I just haven't yet. But I think people should chase more catfish on fly rods, just saying.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. If there's one thing you know about me, man, it's that I really like chunking for catfish.
Yep. Yep.
And I guess if there's another thing you know about me, it's that I really like catching fish on fly gear.
Yep.
And you would think that would be a pretty obvious intersection of those two interests. And I've heard of people catching them, particularly on mulberries.
It's situational. That's the problem. Like I think like the catfish on fly, especially rising to something, mm-hmm. you can't go out and find that. Like it finds you. In right. all those scenarios, it's like I was there fishing for carp with the mulberries, and until the tide changed, it was nothing but channel cats up. So I'm like, okay. And then you're smallmouth fishing with white flies, and then there's channel, you know, but
yeah.
It's a really hard thing to find, and channel cats are funky.
Right now.
Right? But yeah, because they'll eat a bait off the bottom, and I don't know how many times I've inadvertently caught them on smallmouth lures. It's almost like at some point in the year, and I think it happens a lot in the fall, they'll just flip this switch for a little while where these like lazy, you know, vacuum cleaners just go full on mid-column predatory mode, and they're like chasing bait fish around and stuff like that. I've just never been in that scenario with a fly rod in my hand. So.
Yeah, I've caught channel cats on like poppers fishing at night, but that's about as far as like, I guess you'd call unconventional catfishing methods goes for
me. Yeah, yep.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth. After 3 years of work, our follow-up to the Meat Eater Fishing Game Cookbook is here. It's the Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, campfire, and camp stove. Here is your book for everything that's best cooked or eaten outside, from grilling to open fire cooking to Dutch ovens to smokers to barbecue to backpacking meals to how to pull off the perfect fish fry, with pit stops along the way for lessons about ice age cooking methods and the best five ways to construct a cooking fire you can be proud of. And of course, we're focusing on wild game and fish here with over 100 recipes, including stuffed venison burgers three ways, wild duck with aji verde sauce, a jerky made with cola, a gin and tonic made with fire-charred lemons, and grilled frog legs made with a sticky sweet sauce. This ain't your normal cookbook, so be prepared to be surprised. Get your copy now. For more info, visit themeateater.com or buy it wherever books are sold.
Speaking of roping in giant fish, I got a heater, and if Phil doesn't like ancient fish in places where they're not supposed to be, like last week, maybe Phil will be more interested in saving the whales.
Oh, yeah, dude. Totally. Can't you see Phil on one of those whale boats in the Antarctic ramming other ships while he's
Phil is one of the secret meat-eater Greenpeace folks that you hear about.
You've been outed.
Yeah. So this story comes from ABC 10 in San Diego. San Diego angler Matt Capron was out with some buddies trying to catch some bluefin on the weekend. They were about 100 miles off the coast of Point Lima when they came across a humpback that got itself all f***ed up in a lobster pot.
Mm.
The whale had managed to get its tail wrapped around 6 or 7 times just above the fluke. Mm-hmm, so obviously, that whale's not going super far. So what did Capron do? He grabbed a fillet knife and just went full send, jumping into the water and cutting away the rope, freeing the whale.
Good.
One of his buddies, it was badass. One of his buddies took a video of the entire thing, and it's some crazy footage. But my favorite part of that whole video is you can hear a guy in the back comment, "George is still fishing." George, you are a man after my own heart, and I appreciate your dedication despite the context in which you're fishing.
Dude, I really want to try not to get off, but that just triggered a story in my brain very, very quickly. I'm not going to name names. I've never gotten my buddy to tell the story publicly. He knows who he is. He's listening. But I have a friend who was on a party boat way offshore, and a guy died of a heart attack. He just dropped dead. Oh. And it obviously shook the whole boat, right? Everybody was upset. But there was that one old crotchety grizzled dude who he paid his $120 to be out there tuna fishing. And as they're zipping the dude up into a sleeping bag, he's like, "Well, guess I'll keep the chum slick going." It's always that one. Anyway, that's what it made me think of. That's what George. Yeah. That's George. That's what makes me think of.
Yeah, I've heard a story similar. It might be it might have been on the Meat Eater podcast, but somebody was telling a story about how one of their buddies or a buddy of a buddy died in a duck blind, and they thought the best way to honor him would be to shoot a couple more ducks while they were still flying.
Yeah, dude. If I ever die on a boat full of buddies, boys, keep fishing, okay?
Yeah,
there's nothing you're going to do for me anyway.
Yeah. Anyhow, the whale wasn't a huge whale.
Mm-hmm.
But being at the ass end of a whale like that is pretty dangerous, particularly when you're treading water holding an 8-inch fillet knife.
Yeah.
From my understanding of it, with most whales, right, like orcas or something with teeth aside, the most dangerous part about them is the fluke, right? Their motor. You ever see that video of an orca punting a seal a mile into the air?
Yes.
That seal went 80 feet up in the air.
Yes, dude, I have seen that video, and just personally, I've been up close and personal with a lot of whales here striper fishing because they come in and eat the bunker, and there's tons of videos out there kayakers almost getting crushed under flukes. You know, when those things are just steamrolling through bait, you don't know where they're going to come up, and if that hits you, you're dead, right? Oh. I mean, you're dead.
Well, it's like a tree falling on you, man.
Yes.
You're, game over.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, granted, the whale in the video of the seal was an orca, but it just kind of, goes to speak to that sort of power that these things have. You know, dude was in a pretty dangerous spot. But everything ends well. The guy doesn't get whale punted into another dimension. Willie goes free. The reporter asks him if he felt like the whale came back to say thank you.
Guys, we have to anthropomorphize everything. Also, you know Free Willy, but not Days of Thunder. I don't like that.
Well, I'm of a certain age.
they came out the same year, I think, but that's irrelevant. Maybe,
I don't know. The whale may have just been like disoriented after nearly drowning.
Possibly. And it's a possibility. It's, yeah.
It could have just swum in a circle. Anyhow, the story is kind of cut and dry. The whale got tangled, dude freed it, the end. But it kind of got me wondering a little bit. A lobster pot 100 miles offshore seems like kind of a needle in the haystack, right? My question is, was this a fluke?
Phil, note that pun for judgment, please. Moving on.
Bonus points. Turns out this kind of thing happens all the damn time. And not only does it like suck for the whales, but it also sucks for the commercial dudes getting their gear busted up or dealing with seasonal closures of like good fishing ground because there are whales in the area. Like both of those things suck. So researching that a little bit, I found out that this is such a problem. Folks are actively searching for ways to get around it or help the whales get around it.
Right.
My research led me to an article about some folks at the Woods Hole Institute developing ropeless lobster pots. And it just so happens my dear, dear friend Molly Curran is an engineer at the Woods Hole Institute and works with
those guys.
Look at
you, ace in the hole, contacts at Woods Hole.
So I asked her for their emails, and they never got back to me. So the article...
Never mind. It's a two of clubs in your pocket.
So
snubbed. Love it.
So I'm just going to talk about the article.
Though. Good effort.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. The article just kind of details these lobster pots, which are basically lobster pots with ropes that settle to the bottom with the trap. Then after an acoustic trigger or a timer goes off, the buoy floats up to the top, and in that way, they can keep the ropes out of the water column and away from marine life.
Interesting. Right.
There was also this statistic in the article. According to studies by the New England Aquarium and the Center for Coastal Studies, 83% of North Atlantic right whales and about 50% of humpbacks between Cape Cod and Nova Scotia get f***ed up in a net or a rope at some point. It didn't present it exactly like that, but that's like the crux.
No, I would imagine it didn't. I'm sure that wasn't a direct quote from the scientific journal, but I got what you're saying.
Anyhow, you know, I've thought of whales getting wrapped up in nets and stuff before, but it never really occurred to me that they get tangled up in lobster pots like quite as much as they do. So that makes the story interesting to me for two reasons. One, freeing a whale is probably like a very, very cool experience, and the footage is pretty amazing. And two, it kind of brought to light a problem that I didn't really know existed, and let me sort of also flex a connection to the Woods Hole Institute.
You didn't flex anything at the Woods Hole. You failed. They were like, "Nah, I don't have time for you. We're off researching things, dude."
Phil, if I lose this episode of Fish News, blame Molly Curran.
Oh man, dude, it's a cool story though, and I love what you did there with the lobster pots, because thinking about that, you know, for one, it surprises me that that many whales get tangled in those. At least I think it does, because I spend a lot of time mahi fishing on them, and for them, I mean, you're talking about one rope. There's basically one rope going down. Now, I guess if they tangled one and ran into a bunch of other ones, that's a different story. I think that the ropeless lobster pots, though, super cool idea. And what I wonder about that is, what is the cost? I mean, you hear all the time about how commercial fishing doesn't pay the bills like it used to. So, like, can your average commercial lobster operation afford to switch over all that gear to these, you know, acoustic tag linked lobster pots?
Well, Joe, I thought of the same thing. And so I looked into it, and it turns out that, like, that is kind of the big you know, critique of this
right,
idea.
Setback. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they said something like with the current models like available, it would cost like $1,000 or something to equip each lobster pot. And also wow. like there was something about setting like the connection involves this like nickel plated wire or something like that. That's like right. kind of like a tedious little process to do. But these alternate lobster pots that they're suggesting would be much cheaper and thus making them commercially viable. The other argument was that without, you know, these whales kind of messing up all the gear and, you know, dragging, for instance, like one gets stuck on one lobster pot, keeps swimming because sure. it's a big whale.
Sure.
And, you know, hooks up a bunch of others. I mean, like, that's like $80 a lobster pot, right? Like, that's like a significant amount of gear kind of.
Yeah, it's a big
totaled.
Hit. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
So they kind of justified it that way. I'm not sure when that might come to fruition, but if it does, I mean, I would see it being a really, really good thing.
Well, yeah, and like the good human in me agrees with you, but like the jerk in me is like, yeah, but if you do that and take away all the lobster pots with ropes, where am I going to catch my mahis in the summer? Like, I'm the weirdo that's like, yay, wind farms, more mahi structure, like put stuff out there to hold cool fish. You know what I mean?
Wasn't that on like a recent episode or not a recent episode?
That was a while ago. We talked about that. Yeah, no, not on B-side. We just talked about it. Oh, the mahi, you mean? Yeah. Episode one was lobster pot mahi fishing, which is the bomb, but you kind of need lobster pots. So, you know.
Yeah. Maybe.
And the only other thing I would say, and again, I'm not super well versed in this. I might be talking out of school. Good on, dude, for freeing the whale. But I've always been taught or heard and read that, like, under no circumstances are you ever allowed to muck with a marine mammal, living or dead. Like, you just can't mess with one.
Yeah, but I mean, you could make the argument that that, like, whale had already kind of been, like, molested a little bit by folks before, you know,
true.
Dude jumped in, right? You know, the damage had already been done.
Yeah, well, okay. And he did a good deed. So the whale is free and everybody is happy. We'll see how happy Phil is with these two stories today. And then when we're done with that, we're going to go have a drink in zombie land, zombie salmon land. Hayden here is going to lead us solo in a That's My Bar. And it's a really, really good one.
Hayden, you're the winner this week. I would also like to extend a big thank you to Matt Capron. If we learned anything from Star Trek IV, that whale that he freed might one day be responsible for preventing an Earth-ending alien invasion. In that movie, the crew saves some whales from whalers by spooking them away with their giant futuristic spaceship, which isn't nearly as cool as it would have been if Leonard Nimoy jumped on deck and went ham on everybody with a fillet knife.
Best goddamn bartender from Timbuktu to Portland, Maine. To Portland, Oregon, for that matter.
Salmon season in New York. You know, I love it. Got the hum of generators, the crackling of autumn leaves and beer cans beneath your feet, and the lighthearted pleasantries exchanged by anglers hooked up to the same fish.
This is all your fault!
These are the sounds of October in Pulaski. After a long day of dodging egg sinkers, ugly sticks, and suspiciously large Estes eggs, or as we call it, salmon fishing, everyone needs a great place to unwind. Well, friends, look no further than the Altmar Hotel. Located right by the lower fly-only zone of the world-famous Salmon River, the Altmar Hotel is the perfect place to debate which color sponge those mud sharks are craving and pick up a dry rub recipe so good your friends will swear that zombie fish wasn't mostly dead by the time you caught it. At Altmar Hotel, they combine friendly service and staff with the ever-present feeling that a full-on brawl might break out. And that's true. The bartender's going to call you honey, while on more than one occasion, I've been pretty sure fish weren't the only things about to find themselves bludgeoned in the parking lot. Anyhow, you sit down for a cold one at the bar and you might notice a sign that says, Lou, be nice or get out. Now, Lou's a friend of mine, and if you're lucky enough or unlucky enough to run into him, you should know that that sign is only half joking. He's grumpy as hell, and he's convinced you suck at fishing. If you're feeling brave, you can go ahead and buy him a shot of tequila, and he'll be glad to tell you exactly why that is, but be warned. He really isn't very nice, and he's normally kind of right. Jokes aside, I do actually love this bar. It's got pool tables, cold beer, that flickering neon vibe, and some surprisingly good live music. You know, what's not to love? From bikers riding Harleys to anglers fishing boutique Hardys, the Altmar Hotel has something for everyone, including a karaoke night, meatloaf Mondays, fish Fridays, and a Thursday wing night so reasonably priced, you'd swear they were rotten if only they weren't so damn good. That said, pretty much everything on the menu is great, and I particularly like their chicken parm, which weighs more than the sore-covered ass-snack coho your buddy dragged in today and could feed his whole family in a way less disgusting way. So if you're on the hunt for that greasy brown meal your soul craves after a long day on the water, or just want to snag a few beers while you try to convince yourself all those fish definitely got line-wrapped and weren't just hooked in the south mouth to begin with, grab your buddies and head on over to the Altmar Hotel. Just remember, ditch your studded wading boots at the door, and don't you dare ask Lou if he validates parking. If you've got a dive with this much character or more shady characters, we want to hear about it. Send an email to ben@themeateater.com and rep your favorite fishing bar.
Now, what do you think the odds are that Lou does costume parties? Do they have a Halloween party at the Altmar? What would Lou be?
I would assume that they had a Halloween party at Altmar Hotel. I do not think that Lou does costume parties. However, if he should so happen to do a Halloween costume party, I want to say he'd go as a pirate. Like, he looks like an old pirate. He's kind of like long hair and like a beard and also, you know, like peg leg.
Well, he also seems like the guy at the bar who would be pirate, but just dress in his normal attire and just do the eye patch and the pirate hat. It's like, there you go. I'm dressed. All right.
Yeah.
It's just another day of drinking. Sorry. It's Halloween. Oh man. Well, we may never know what Lou would be. But I did ask our resident Lou, our Lou of the striper scene, that being Bob, the garbage man, Bertana Nananuski. And I got to tell you, while I expected no reply about Halloween costumes from him, I got this.
This is Bob the Garbage Man Bertana Nananuski, and one time I dressed up as an Atlantic City police officer. Not long after, I dressed up as an inmate at the Bayside State Prison for a little while. But neither one of those costumes had anything to do with Halloween, per se.
Thank you, Bob. That is at once deeply concerning and totally unsurprising.
I've said before, I don't really know. I don't have any idea what goes on in Bob's personal life. Like, usually we're just talking fish stuff. I don't want to know. I don't want to know anything about either of those costumes. What I do know for a fact is that he would hate this week's End of the Line segment because it deals with a striper bait that is not bunker. And I chose it to close out on our theme this week. So I was trying to come up with a Halloween-related bait or lure, and when I realized that this one allowed me to reference one of my favorite Kevin Bacon films, I knew I had arrived.
Fishy, 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 fishy!
Well, that's not loud enough, Bert.
Sandworms have wiggled their way into pop culture via the sci-fi horror genre three times. You had the Shai Hulud, a massive sandworm that played a big role in 1984's Dune, which you probably never saw because it's 3 hours long, and in my opinion, it's just boring as shit. The best thing to come out of it was the band Shai Hulud, which took its name from that monster Dune worm and is a pretty damn good hardcore metal band. After Dune, we didn't see a killer sandworm on the big screen again until 1988 in Tim Burton's Beetlejuice. You might recall that if the ghosts stepped out of the door of their former home, they'd find themselves whisked away to Saturn, where that huge black and white striped sandworm with two heads and a shark fin would gobble them up.
Whoa. Sandworms. You hate them, right? I hate them myself!
But it wasn't until 1990 when director Ron Underwood truly cemented the fear of burrowing worms with nasty mouth parts into the minds of the masses with Tremors and its famous graboids. I lie awake at night, often, wondering how Tremors was beaten out for Best Picture by driving Miss Daisy in the Oscars that year. Because, I mean, Jessica Tandy is a badass and all, but Hoke and Daisy didn't have nothing on Valentine McKee and Earl Bass, played by Kevin Bacon and the underappreciated Fred Ward. Add in Crazy Bert with all his guns, and you've got a timeless classic.
Broke into the wrong goddamn rec room, didn't you, you bastard?
Anyway, the thing is, as spooky and terrifying as the Hollywood versions of sandworms may be, it's freakier when you understand that they're all based around real sandworms, and while their traits have been exaggerated to scare you, they do mirror natural features and tendencies of these slimy little worms. Many species of sandworms exist on our planet. They can be found in warm and cold climates and go by several different names, including beachworms in Australia, though the name used most often by science to classify them is actually lugworms. Depending on the age and species, sandworms can range in length from a few inches to a few feet. In Alaska, there are sandworms as thick around as a rattlesnake, while other varieties are just ribbon thin. What they all have in common is what are technically called parapodium, but look like tiny legs or little feathers running down each side of their body. And these, of course, help them burrow and move around under the sand. Sandworms can range in color from pink to red, black to green, and brown to orange, but regardless of the shade, they are all just disgustingly, hideously ugly. And unlike nightcrawlers, they have a very distinct head and tail. That head also has a mouth, from which it launches two retractable, very sharp, hard, and pointy pinchers. That's how these omnivorous worms grab everything from small invertebrates or bits of seaweed to other worms, and if you've ever used them for bait, you know they will make every effort to sink those pinchers into your skin while you're trying to put them on a hook. Sandworms have always both creeped me out and skeeved me out, which is kind of the same thing. But regardless, they've been a top-producing bait for myriad inshore species since, like, the dawn of time. They have a unique smell that fish can't seem to resist, and since these worms are usually buried pretty deep, finding one out in the open is a rare treat for a fish. In Australia, they're still a top bait for sea bream. On the west coast of the U.S., they're a top producer of species like surf perch. Out here on the East Coast, fluke, flounder, and white perch can't gobble them up fast enough, but they were always best known here as a striper bait, particularly in the early spring when the resident bass go on the feed over warm mudflats. Why then, if this bait is so good and so popular, do you not see it used as frequently as you once did or talked about as often? The simple answer there is cost. It's been years since I've purchased sandworms in a local tackle shop, but I looked online and found a dealer that ships direct. The current rate for a dozen sandworms in the year 2021 is $30. There are tutorials on YouTube for harvesting your own sandworms, but I wouldn't call it quick or easy. First, you have to identify their holes by looking for the tiny pile of sandy spaghetti that the worm discards behind it as it burrows. You have to extract them carefully so they don't break. It's tedious, and most of the sandworms that end up in tackle shops and gas stations along the eastern seaboard come from just a handful of commercial harvesters in Maine. Now, they can only harvest at low tide, and they can only do it by hand. There's no machinery involved. Factor in that the next generation isn't really overly interested in learning that trade, and you've got a severe labor shortage in a niche business that has a hell of a time keeping up with supply and demand. When Berkeley Gulp first introduced its line of saltwater baits many years ago, one of the things they unveiled was their sandworm. It was one of the first true soft plastic baits designed not to be worked and manipulated on a jig head or wacky rig or Texas rig, but rather dead-sticked like a real sandworm. They cost a fraction of the price of the real worms, and I can tell you what, they stayed on the hook a hell of a lot longer. But all these years later, if you walk out on any of the beaches frequented by those looking for that first striper in March or maybe a pile of white perch in the colder months, rest assured, it's the guys that ponied up the $30 that have a few pricks in their fingers from those nasty graboids that are outfishing everyone else. So that's it for this week. But before we sign off, how about one last costume from our amigo and DOS boat star, Captain Frank Cresitelli from Staten Island? If you think about it, right, all Halloween really is the kickoff to a barrage of holidays like coming at your face that you have to deal with and cannot avoid. So I think this is fitting.
This is Captain Frank Cresitelli. And one of the crazy outfits I've worn on Halloween while fishing was a full Santa outfit. I usually break it out on Halloween, but then it makes a reappearance just around that magical time.
Classic.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I've actually seen a couple people fishing in like drift boats and stuff, or during steelhead season around Christmas.
Right, right.
I'm not sure I've ever seen it for Halloween. It seems like you kind of just wait a couple months and get your Santa fix then.
Well, yeah, that's fair. But I would bet that like a guy like Frank just has a Santa costume he paid a decent amount of money for. So like he ain't going out to buy like a Frankenstein suit on Halloween. He's just like, it, I'll do Santa twice.
It's like
a matter of like it's efficiency.
Yeah.
Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed our nod to Halloween. Don't forget, if I end up murdered in my home, it was the Missouri Trout Jigs guy. Driving Miss Daisy wasn't as good as Tremors. Brian Wise is a very convincing woman, and Hayden would love for you to invite him over for Meatloaf Monday.
Never turn down some meatloaf, man. Unless it's on the radio. Joe, I gotta say, I had a blast doing the whole show with you this week.
This was fun, dude. Yeah, for sure.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. Bent is probably my favorite show on the entire Meat Eater Network. And after they fire me, it'll probably be the only one I keep listening to.
Nice. That's good.
But while I'm still here, friendly reminder to keep those sale bin items, bar nominations, awkward photos, and all that good stuff coming to bent@themeateater.com.
Yes, sir. Also, keep using those Degenerate Angler and Bent Podcast hashtags on Instagram. It's the quickest way to get stickers from us. And finally, after trick-or-treating with the kids this Sunday, do the responsible thing and check all the Reese's and Rolos for embedded sandworms. There's a lot of sickos out there, man.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. After 3 years of work, our follow-up to the Meat Eater Fishing Game Cookbook is here. It's the Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, campfire, and camp stove. Here is your book for everything that's best cooked or eaten outside, from grilling to open fire cooking to Dutch ovens to smokers to barbecue to backpacking meals to how to pull off the perfect fish fry. With pit stops along the way for lessons about ice age cooking methods and the best 5 ways to construct a cooking fire you can be proud of. And of course, we're focusing on wild game and fish here with over 100 recipes, including stuffed venison burgers 3 ways, wild duck with aji verde sauce, a jerky made with cola, a gin and tonic made with fire charred lemons, and grilled frog legs made with a sticky sweet sauce. This ain't your normal cookbook, so be prepared to be surprised. Get your copy now. For more info, visit themeateater.com or buy it wherever books are sold.